Srila Prabhupada has written in his books in several places that the purpose of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to provide the opportunity for people to associate with devotees. What we associate with, we become like that. That is the law of nature. When people come to our temples, our communities, or even to our homes, they should experience the association of Krishna, the spiritual world, through the hearts and the lives of the devotees. Because it is the devotees that reveal Krishna in this world. When devotees are cooperative together, with respect, with affection, with concern, and striving to live by proper, pure spiritual standards, that place becomes Vaikuntha. Tatra tishtami Narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. The Lord himself has declared in this way, "You will not find me in Vaikuntha," Krishna has told Narada Muni, "or in the institution of the great academic scholars of the Vedas, nor in the caves of the yogis. You will find me wherever my devotees are gathered together to chant my names and glories." Srila Prabhupada explains what is Grihastha Ashram. When Krishna is in the center of the relationship between husband and wife, when a husband respects and protects the wife, protecting wife means physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We have three bodies. It is the duty to protect each other in this world. So husband's protection of wife physically means to provide the necessities of proper food, proper clothing, proper shelter. But that's the easiest thing to do. Emotional protection is essential. People need to feel appreciated. People need to feel encouraged. People need to feel loved and cared for. That is the duty of husband. And spiritually, it is the husband's duty to protect the wife by giving all facilities, example, and direction so that they could surrender their lives wholeheartedly to the loving service of Guru and Gauranga. And the wife's duty is to remain faithful, chaste, in service of husband. Actually, everyone is serviced. The husband is serving the wife according to his role, and the wife is serving the husband according to her role, by trying to create a very, very clean, pure spiritual environment at home, by giving support, by giving encouragement, by giving appreciation to the husband, and by giving the husband complete confidence of her faithfulness, her chastity, and her dedication. Srila Prabhupada explains, when this chemistry is there, the house becomes Vaikuntha. Literally, the house is Vaikuntha. And in that Vaikuntha atmosphere, naturally the children and anybody who comes in becomes spiritually purified and spiritually enlightened. That Vaikuntha environment is created by the type of relationship. Relationship with Krishna in the center. But what does it mean that Krishna is in the center? It means we become selfless in the spirit of service. We serve Krishna by not only chanting his holy names and worshiping the deity and performing such functions, reading Bhagavatam, Gita, and other holy scriptures, but also giving all facility, encouragement to those around us to make spiritual progress. In the Brahmachari ashram. That principle is there. Brahmachari ashram, in its true state, is a place of complete surrender and sacrifice. A real Brahmachari offers his independence to Krishna, Guru, and his authorities. In the traditional sense, a brahmachari doesn't even think about eating until Guru says, eat. Haribo. Of course, we don't do that these days for obvious reasons, but that was the standard. Completely surrendered in a spirit of sacrifice and service. With that type of consciousness, the Brahmachari ashram is very, very united. And we see that if there's not a strong Brahmachari ashram, it's very difficult for Brahmacharis to remain Brahmacharis. Because there's a lot of opposition against this principle. So whether there's, even if there's two Brahmacharis or three Brahmacharis, the idea is you need each other. You need to protect each other. That's the principle. And how do you protect each other? You have to have friendship. If brahmacharis don't have good friendship amongst brahmacharis, then they're going to have to look elsewhere. Either in the material existence or in the grihastha ashram. Because relationships are essential for our longevity in practicing Krishna consciousness. Within Brahmachari ashram, what is the purpose of our relationships? To protect each other from Maya. That's the same purpose of the relationship between husband and wife, to protect each other from Maya. By inspiring surrender, by inspiring purity, by trying to serve the other, not only by your words, but by your example. And according to the Varnashram principle, the relationship between brahmacharis and grihasthas is the same thing. The brahmacharis are meant to serve the grihasthas by living a very, very high renounced standard, a very pure standard that the grihasthas are inspired by. They need to see renunciation. And the grihasthas serve the brahmacharis by their charity, by supporting and facilitating. Everyone is serving. Within Vaishnava society, in its real sense, there's no ego. There's no I'm better than you. Everyone is serving. Everyone is helping each other to grow spiritually. In Krishna-conscious society, where Krishna is in the center, everyone is in the spirit of servant of the servant of the servant. But that's not just a sentiment. We have to understand how to serve. And the spirit is simple: to help each other to keep Krishna in the center. And in this world, sometimes Maya strikes. Sometimes she strikes us, and we need the help and the support of the Vaishnavas. And sometimes they will support another, and we need to give that person the help and the support of the Vaishnavas. That is compassion. We shouldn't criticize a person when they're having difficulty. We should reach out and try to help them, because we very well may be in that same position tomorrow. We are in a war against material energy. The moment you decide that you want to be Krishna conscious, you have declared war against material nature. Hare Krishna. Now, here in Europe, you know about wars. At least you've heard about it from your parents and your grandparents. Some of you may have even seen it. When the enemy attacks with their full force, you need help. In the front lines of the battlefield, the most important wealth that you have in your life is the other soldiers who are fighting with you. If every soldier is not trying to protect themselves and each other, they're finished. Can you fight a battle against the greatest enemy, material nature, alone? Even if you have the best training and in instructions from the Vaishnavacharyas and from the spiritual master, with all that training, can you fight alone? If you're a Paramhamsa like Srila Prabhupada, yes. He came to New York City alone. But because of the magnitude of his surrender to his spiritual master in Krishna, because of the level of his love for Krishna, he could conquer the entire universe alone. Well, we should be honest. Many of us are not at that stage. So even though we have the spiritual master, and we have Prabhupada's books, and we understand what is to be done and what is not to be done, still Maya is attacking from within and from without, and we need help. We need support. When you are in the front lines of a battlefield, your comrades are your shelter. Now, what happens in the front lines? You've seen the movies of the front lines, where you're just in a ditch and you're just, and the enemy is throwing bombs and hand grenades, and you're just. Now, what happens in the front lines when you're fighting against Maya? If somehow or other, you know, the person's next to you, you start having arguments about, you know, my gun is better than yours. No, my gun is better than yours. I don't like the way you wear your hat. I don't like the color of your shoes. You start fighting each other, what happens? You're both defeated. So the greatest crisis, and this is what Prabhupada warned us of the most, inner conflict. Recently we were in Vrindavan, and we told the story of after Krishna danced upon the hoods of Kaliya, the Naga serpent, then the Brijabasis were so happy that Kaliya surrendered and Krishna was safe. But they suffered so terribly seeing Krishna for so many hours in the coils of Kaliya. So finally, when Krishna came out of the Jamuna, the Brijabasis, they didn't want to be separated from Krishna. Let us spend the night sleeping in the forest together. So Krishna agreed. So how nice it was, all the Brijabasis together, sleeping alongside Krishna. But the nature of this world is at any moment, at any time, there can be fire. And in this case, there was fire, literally. In the middle of the night, they woke up and there was a blazing fire up to the sky on all four sides around them. It was an all-devouring fire. So the Brijabasis, they all looked around and what are they going to do? Where there's a blazing fire, you're really helpless. I'll never forget one time, I may have told this story, but at New Vrindavan, I was just minding my own business, chanting japa, walking down a road, and all of a sudden I hear, "Help, help, 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 Hare Krishna, Hare Bol." And I look over, and this one lady is alone in her house, and her house is on blazing fire. Hare Bol. And she was in the kitchen window crying for help. Now, she could get out somehow or other. She was right near the door. But she had some precious things in her basement, which was around another door, and she was screaming, "Please go down and get these things for me." So, you know, it was one of my godbrother's wives, so I was thinking, I'm a brahmachari, I'm supposed to be servant of the servant, so I thought, okay, I'll get those things from her basement. So I went down the side door and walked down some stairs and opened the door. And the basement, there was nothing dangerous in there. So I was thinking, so I went and looked at some valuable things and I was about to get it. And then from the upstairs, there was a stairway. I couldn't believe what I saw. It was mystical. Fireballs were rolling down the stairs. The fireballs were about as big as, they were about 8 feet high and 8 feet wide. Just solid fire in the form of balls rolling down one after another after another. Have you ever seen a fireball before? I couldn't believe they were just rolling down, these gigantic, they were rolling right at me. So I didn't do my service very well. I escaped. And within a matter of seconds, I looked, those fireballs just made the entire basement solid fire. Then I went outside and the entire house was blazing fire. Now what are you supposed to do? Well, this was a little fire. The Brijabasis were in a massive forest fire. So they all turned to Krishna with folded hands. "Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, you are very great, Krishna, please save us." So Krishna effortlessly just breathed in for a moment, and in breathing in, The entire forest fire entered into his mouth and disappeared. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that all of the demons that came to Vrindavan represent serious obstacles that must be overcome on the path to Braj. Now, according to Bishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, and other commentators, this fire was actually a demon who took the... He took the form of fire. Some say that Kamsa sent him to kill the whole Brajbhumi, all the Brijabasis. And others say he was a friend of Kaliya, who was really disgusted by Kaliya's humiliation. Now, what does this forest fire demon represent? Thakur Bhaktivinoda explains, intercommunal conflict amongst Vaishnavas. That quarrelsome, argumentative nature amongst Vaishnavas. It's like fire. When our beloved Srila Prabhupada was visiting Sri Radha Kund, he met his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And if you remember, they were walking along the banks of Sri Radha Kund. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very, very much unhappy state of mind in the affairs of his mission, because they had just built that beautiful Gaudiya Math in Bagh Bazar, Calcutta. And the devotees, although once very, very much united in a spirit of humble surrender to execute the order of the spiritual master, some of the devotees, even leading devotees, were fighting over who gets the better facilities within the temple. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said to Prabhupada, there is fire in the mat. It would be better if we sell all the marble and all the opulence of the temple and to print and distribute books. If you get money, print and distribute books. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur compared conflict amongst Vaishnavas to a raging fire. So when we're fighting amongst each other, how can we be strong to fight against the enemy? Because the fact is, you are on the front lines. It's not just that you have to go out into the streets with a book bag to be in the front lines. Within your very heart, just to remember Krishna, just to maintain your vows and your principles of devotional service, in your heart, you're on the front lines fighting against Maya. And we have to be aware of that. Sometimes the enemy disguises themselves as a friend. And we think, oh, I'm safe. Everything's very nice. Pralambasura represented that kind of demon. Pralambasura disguised himself as a gopa to kill Krishna and Balaram. So sometimes we think, sometimes Maya makes everything, oh, you are very safe, you are very nice, everything is good. And then we become negligent. Negligent in our sadhana. We become negligent in our behavior with other devotees. And then we're defeated. So we must understand how serious this is, trying to be Krishna conscious, especially in this age of Kali. Maya is attacking at every moment, whether you see her or not, whether you're conscious or not. Who do you think gives the intelligence to these terrorists? It's Maya. She's the supreme most terrorist. What is terrorism? When you attack in such a way that nobody knows you're attacking. You go into a place and blow up or plant bombs somewhere where people are just eating and having a nice time. That's terrorism. You're not even, you don't even show yourself to the enemy. So Maya, she's always trying to terrorize us. In the least expected disguise, she's there to haunt us, to take us away from Krishna, to try to kill our Krishna consciousness. So how to remain alert? How to remain protected? We must have proper association with Vaishnavas. And we have seen, not only within our society, but in so many spiritual societies, that if there isn't strong unity, strong standards of relationships to help each other, then people just drop off one after another, after another, after another. If one of your fellow comrades is wounded in the battle, because actually all problems come because we're wounded by Maya. It's our duty to help each other. Because we need each other. Maya is so strong. There is a beautiful story in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita about Kal Krishna Das. He was a very nice brahmachari devotee. And he was given by Lord, by Swarup Damodar Goswami and the other by Nityananda Prabhu to be Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal servant during his tour of South India. Even though he was personally in the association of Lord Chaitanya doing his seva, still, Maya attacked him in the form of the Bataharis. You all know what is Batahari. There are so many all over the place, whether they call themselves that name or not. They're pseudo-religionists, tantrics, they actually have powers. And they use their powers to somehow or other seduce young girls to join their ranks, and then get those girls to seduce young men to join their ranks. And once they join, they just put all kinds of intense mystical spells on those persons where they surrender. That is Batahari. That's how Maya works. So when they were in the southern provinces of Karnataka, somehow or other, Kal Krishna Das became attracted to these Bataharis. And in the middle of the night, he actually left Lord Chaitanya being seduced by the influences of the Bataharis and their women, and left Lord Chaitanya. Now, Lord Chaitanya, he didn't just say, he's in Maya. He went there to save him. He talked to Bataharis. Why you are doing like this? Your Bataharis would actually dress themselves as sannyasis, even though they were not at all qualified. He said, you are sannyasi. He was actually giving them respect. And I am sannyasi, and I need my servant. Why you have taken him? Please return him. So they became so angry, they picked up choppers and swords and clubs, and they attacked to kill Lord Chaitanya. And as they were running toward him with these weapons, he just smiled. Haribo. And then the weapons themselves became alive and jumped out of their hands and started stabbing, beating, and cutting to pieces them. They were running away as the weapons were chasing behind, stabbing, cutting off their arms, cutting off their legs. They were screaming and screaming, and Lord Chaitanya took his servant Krishnadas and dragged him back by the hair. Hare Krishna. So he protected him from Maya. And Kal Krishnadas realized by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya that he was in illusion. He was in a spell. Now sometimes we're all going to be in spells. If we have the nice association of devotees, they save us. They protect us. They are our shelter. We have to find shelter in the Vaishnav society. And we have to give shelter within the Vaishnav society. This example continues. When they returned to Puri, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the presence of Kal Krishnadas, told Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that this man, he left my service for sense gratification. Therefore, he can do something else. I don't want to see his face anymore. And then Lord Chaitanya walked out. Kal Krishnadas was rejected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His heart was totally broken. He was weeping. He had no reason to live. At that time, it was the Association of Vaishnavas, Nityananda Prabhu, Damodar Pandit, Mukunda, and the others. They brought Kal Krishnadas in. And they were thinking amongst themselves, what are we going to do to help this devotee? Lord Chaitanya had to deal with him in this way to set a proper standard, to give a proper lesson to the world. But what are we going to do to help this devotee? And they had a little meeting where they were just doing everything that they could to figure out a way to protect this devotee's devotional service. And they came up with an idea. He can't be with Lord Chaitanya. But he saw all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya through South India. So let's send him to Bengal to inform all the devotees there, Advaitacharya, Srivas Thakur, and the others, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come back. He could meet them, he could meet Sachimata, and he can tell all of them. He could continuously be telling the wonderful stories of Lord Chaitanya's South Indian tour to give great joy to the Vaishnavas. So then they went back to Lord Chaitanya and said, we want to send a man to inform Sachi Devi, Advaita, and all the others about your arrival and about your beautiful pastimes. Is that all right, my lord? The lord said, do as you like. Ah, so they got his blessings. And then they brought Kal Krishnadas in and they encouraged him and they sent him, and he was such a popular object of everyone's love, bringing this news that after several years, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has finally returned from South India. He has finally, and nobody knew any of the stories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, but he knew them all. So he was bringing gifts to them from Jagannath Puri, and they were giving gifts to him. And he was in an ecstatic situation for the rest of his life, just chanting the glories of Lord Chaitanya in the association of devotees. How was it possible? Even though he was in a fallen and desperate condition, the Vaishnavas felt so much compassion. They wanted to help him. If we could only capture this mood. Another famous story. During the Mahaprakash Leela, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving his mercy to all the devotees, every desire their hearts had, he was fulfilling. They were in ecstasy. He was always in the role of a devotee, performing just basic activities of sadhana bhakti. They wanted to worship him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he would not permit it. This was his example. But on this particular day, he entered into the house of Srivas Thakur, and he sat on the throne of Vishnu and told them, now perform Abhishek. So they did Abhishek for him, and they were singing the Purusha Shukta prayers, the songs glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They were offering him offerings of thousands of bananas and sweetmeats and jars of Ganges water. They were pouring water upon him and putting scented oils upon his body and flowers and jewels and necklaces and beautiful silken garments. It was the ultimate happiness for the devotees. But then, Lord Chaitanya would call each devotee forward, glorify that devotee, and then reveal to that devotee the eternal form that he worshipped. To Murari Gupta, he manifested his beautiful form as Lord Sri Ramchandra, with a beautiful complexion like the Durva grass, and with him was Sita and Lakshman. To Kolavecha Sridhar, whose eternal position is a cowherd boy in Goloka, he manifested the beautiful form of Krishna and Balaram standing together in a forest of kadamba trees, being worshipped by all the gods and the damsels of Braja. To others, he displayed his beautiful form of Krishna playing upon flute. In this way, every devotee was ecstatically enlivened. But then, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not give darshan to Mukunda Dutt. And the devotees asked, my lord, please, why don't you give darshan to Mukunda Dutt? He's all alone. You're not calling upon him. He'll never come forward unless you call him. He's a humble devotee. Please call him. And Lord Chaitanya, to teach how much he doesn't like Mayavad philosophy, in a very strong way, he said, I never want to see his face again. He associates with Mayavadis. Hare Krishna. He doesn't discriminate. And Mukunda Dutt was weeping. He was crying. And when the Lord did not give his mercy to Mukunda Dutt, every single devotee in the room, those same devotees who the Lord was giving all his mercy to, who was fulfilling all of their own personal desires, they all felt as anguished and as miserable as Mukunda. Srivas Thakur was weeping and crying, begging the Lord, please be merciful to him. We will not be able to live if he's in such pain. What has he done? Please be kind to him. What a wonderful example. Personally, they were all attaining the highest treasure. But that didn't mean anything to them anymore. Their only concern was Mukunda Dutt's happiness. They were more concerned with him than themselves. Now, for most of us, we would think, well, maybe Mukunda did something wrong, but I got to see Lord Ram, I got to see Krishna, I got to see Krishna Balaram. It wasn't like that, no. It didn't matter what they saw. Mukunda was their loving God brother. They were begging and pleading and appealing to Lord Chaitanya to be merciful to him. And Mukunda Dutt was weeping, saying, will I ever see the Lord again? And Srivas Thakur asked, will he ever see you again? And Lord Chaitanya, in an angry voice, he said, after 10 million births, he will see me. And Mukunda Dutt became ecstatic, jumping in the air, leaping, crying out, I will see, I will see, I will see. Only 10 million births and I will see. Lord Chaitanya was so happy to see him in this state. He really had faith and patience. Now what if you were given the benediction that you will see Krishna after 10 million births? Will you be happy or depressed? Huh? How many would be happy? How many would be depressed? Mukunda Dutt was in ecstasy because it's a small birth to live, to surrender to Krishna completely, wholeheartedly for 10 million births is a small price to see Krishna. And he had so much faith in Lord Chaitanya's words that he will see him in 10 million births. He was dancing in ecstasy so much that Lord Chaitanya said, bring him now. And they went, Mukunda Dutt, Mukunda Dutt, please come. The Lord wants to see you now. But Mukunda Dutt was in so much of a trance of happiness, he couldn't hear what they were saying. He, 10 million births, 10 million, I will see after 10 million. Come now, he wants to see you now. After 10 million births, I will see you. Come, he wants to see you now. After 10 million births, I will see him. They had to pick him up and drag him and put him right in Lord Chaitanya's feet. And he looked up and there was Lord Chaitanya. How did it happen? Because the devotees felt so deeply concerned about his spiritual life, more than their own, and they appealed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on his behalf. It is a fact, if the Vaishnavas do not appeal to the Lord for our spirituality, we are in a very, very weak position. We need the blessings of the devotees. We need the protection of the devotees in order to carry on in our full surrender to our spiritual master in Krishna. It is very important. Lord Chaitanya said that all the wealth of all the planets of all the universes is not equal in his heart to the value of one devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted to teach the world the importance of taking care of Vaishnavas. One time a group of devotees, they were sent to a very isolated place to start preaching. And these devotees, they worked so hard. They went to a place where really nobody knew about Krishna consciousness. There was no facilities whatsoever. And they just preached and preached and preached. And they had a large congregation of people and funds were collected. They built a beautiful temple, brand new temple. Then they bought brand new carved deities and brought them in. And they decided to invite Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur for the installation. So he came by train. Now the day before the ceremony of the installation, the day before Saraswati Thakur arrived, there was one brahmachari. And he was in a very inappropriate way talking with one of the neighbor's girls. And brahmacharis were very strict. But he was in a very, very compromised way associating with a girl. So some of the leaders of the mutt chastised him very severely. Cannot do this. Nonsense. So he felt so ashamed and so brokenhearted that without telling anything to anyone, he just left the mat. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comes with the railway station and there's this large kirtan party waiting at the railway station. And all sorts of the dignitaries of that town are waiting for him and garlanding him and giving him all kinds of nice glorifications. And then he's brought in a procession to the temple. And the whole congregation is waiting at the temple. He sees there's mass prasad distribution for thousands and thousands of people. There's hundreds and hundreds of people wearing tilaks and kanti malas, and they're all dancing and chanting. There's a beautiful temple all built and painted so nicely. There's beautiful deities to be installed. They started with nothing, and this is what they had. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur looked at the leader and asked, "Where is that brahmachari?" Hare Krishna, of all things, everything's here except him. He's asking for him. Where is the brahmachari? And they told him that actually this problem happened and he left. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very upset. He said, "That one devotee is more important to me than all these other things that you have built and all this other service you have done. Bring him back." That was shocking. So the devotees came together and were thinking, "We have to find that brahmachari. You know, all our years of building this temple and building this gigantic congregation and everything else, our Guru Maharaj is displeased with us if we don't find that Brahmin. We have to find him. Where are we going to find him?" You know, finding a person in India when they leave is not an easy thing, especially brahmacharis, because they don't have any homes or... So they were taxing their brain. Where can we even look? And one of the leaders, he was very intelligent. He said, "You know, sometime back, one of the devotees' watches broke, and he fixed the watch, so he knows how to fix watches. So he's probably working in a watch repair shop somewhere." So they went to the town to every single watch repair shop. That was the festival for them, just looking for this brahmachari. They couldn't find him anywhere. And at the end of the day, they came to the last watch repair shop and they told the owner of the shop the description of this brahmachari, what he looked like and what his qualities were. He said, "I think I might know who you're talking about. Go in the back room. I think he's there fixing some watches." So they went in the back room and there he was fixing a watch. He was crying while he was fixing the watch. He was crying. And when he saw these devotees, his tears just became incessant. He said, I've been feeling so much intense separation from all of you. But because of my misdeeds, I feel so ashamed to come before you. I feel ashamed to come back to the temple because of what I have done. I have brought disgrace by my behavior." And these devotees, they said that your Guru Maharaj, he's only asking about you. He doesn't care about anything else we've done. He's only concerned about your welfare. Please come back. He said, "Ever since I left, I have been miserable. I have been praying to Krishna to let me come back." So they brought him back. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur embraced him and gave him great mercy. And you know something? That person remained a strict brahmachari for the rest of his life and later took sannyas. This happened when he was a young man. I believe he was a late teenager when this happened. And even when he was 80 years old, this sannyasi, he would always love to talk about his Guru Maharaj's mercy to him. His Guru Maharaj, how he saved his life. He became a very, very intimate associate of Lord of his Guru Maharaj. So this story is very, very instructive. That if we don't take care of the devotees who have given their lives, even if they're having problems, then what kind of projects are we going to develop? The purpose of beautiful temples, the purpose of wonderful projects, is to attract people to come and associate with devotees. But the heart of the Hare Krishna movement is how we share Krishna with each other, how we represent Guru and Krishna to each other. In this world of quarrel and hypocrisy, people are looking for shelter. People aren't just looking for a philosophy. They're looking for a life. We have the greatest philosophy, but unless we could show them practically how this philosophy operates within life, it's very rare that a person will actually find shelter. And the fact is, if you ask most devotees, even the older devotees from 1966 on, why they took seriously the Krishna consciousness movement, there's basically two reasons. Actually, there is a third. The third is prasad. But the prominent two reasons, really, is Prabhupada's books and his philosophy. But that usually comes a little later, that conviction. What really attracts people to join this movement was the association of devotees. When they would see the camaraderie, when they would see the intimacy of the relationships amongst the devotees with each other, how they were really living purely and really trying to help each other and really united. That's such a relief from this dog-eat-dog world. How unfortunate it is if devotees have to go outside of the association to go to some counselor for just so that somebody will be nice to them. If you pay enough money to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or a counselor, he'll be nice to you. But that's not what we're looking for in life. The association of devotees should provide the highest quality of relationships. Srila Prabhupada, I know one devotee, I'm not going to mention names. But when I came to New Vrindavan, I heard about this person. He was so crazy that they actually carried him down that mud road, like in a barrel or something, to get him out. Somehow or other, they got him out because they thought this is a crazy person. That person is one of the most prominent disciples of Prabhupada, even today in this movement. Maybe a little eccentric still, but he's really done a tremendous amount of service. Tremendous amount of service. Why? Because Prabhupada was kind to him. Prabhupada was willing to oversee, you know, his problems and encourage him and nourish him. Srila Prabhupada explained, what is preaching? How many of you would like to give your understanding of what is the meaning of preaching? Yes, Mataji, you are a first-class preacher. Prabhupada explained that preaching is looking for a spark of inclination within a person's heart. Even if that heart is full of lust and envy and anger and greed and pride, even that person's breaking all the regulative principles every minute of every day, somehow or other, look for that spark of an inclination to serve Krishna and concentrate not on all the rest, but on that spark and fan that spark and make it grow into a blazing fire of devotional service, which burns away all impurities. So that's how we preach to the materialistic people. Devotees have bigger sparks, but sometimes due to previous conditioning, certain things happen. It's our duty to each other to help fan those sparks. Sometimes there's managerial concerns where somebody's blowing out everybody else's sparks, so you have to tell them go away and pray from them for a distance. Sometimes that has to be there. Sometimes people come in to blow the spark of faith away from people. We have to, part of service is to protect the innocent from that influence. We can't be sentimental in that regard. But simultaneously, actually, when devotees, due to their previous conditionings, when devotees, due to their, they may not be proper to live in the temple. But each devotee, we should try to situate them where they can actually be most productive in making progress in Krishna consciousness. And fan that spark. Sometimes, due to false ego, we have all kinds of selfish conceptions. And we're not willing to see that spark. We're not willing to see the spiritual needs of another. So the greatest offering we could make is, number one, be an example. Be an example of eagerness to serve, of humility and respectfulness to others, not desiring respect for oneself. Be an example of very, very strong, enthusiastic sadhana, taking shelter of the holy name, chanting your rounds sincerely, taking shelter of the morning program if you're living in a temple, of singing and dancing in front of the deities. Take shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam by preaching the Bhagavatam, by hearing the Bhagavatam. Your sadhana is your basic foundation. And people need to see examples. And be open to be inspired by other people's examples. You could learn so much from Vaishnavas. Just like a few minutes, actually not a few minutes, about an hour ago, I was late, and I saw one devotee looking at his watch, and I was thinking, that's my Shiksha Guru right there. He's conscious about time himself. Why am I not like that? So we see devotees, we could learn so much from Vaishnavas if we're humble. But if we're into ourselves, if we're egoistic, then we're depriving ourselves. So let's try to be really, really nice examples to inspire others. Tendency in this age of Kali Yuga is to be political. Hare Krishna. And what is, of course, there's spiritual politics. Ramananda Rai was a spiritual diplomat. So was Sanatana Goswami. They were expert diplomats from their previous government services. But they used those expertises in Krishna's service. And they were glorious. But when we use those types of expertise for our own purposes, they become abominable. They create disunity, they create quarrel, they create dissension. Spiritual advancement is the progress of our faith. And it is our first and foremost duty to one another to increase each other's faith. We should act, we should live, we should speak in such a way to encourage other people's faith. And we should find shelter and enrich our own faith by seeing the other Vaishnavas in their association. It is time for prasad. So I will end here now. And we will meet again at 5 o'clock. Yes? 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock. promptly. Should we have a few minutes, Kirtan?
Yes, yes.